Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to the James Bond Complex, the podcast where we discuss, rejoice, and analyze everything related to the James Bond phenomenon, from Fleming to the films and everything in between.
And we're back.
We are back. We're back, baby. Now, I'm Edgar.
I'm Matt.
Starters. I seem to have a problem with introducing myself and my
really?
Co-hosts.
Lately? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I think I expect people to know our personalities by now. Nevertheless, I apologize. So, we have, in the past, discussed James Bond graphic novels, comics, call them however you see fit. It makes no difference to me. And we discussed the ones that were published in the past few years from our friends at Dynamite Entertainment. We've thoroughly enjoyed them. However, as some listeners may or may not know, that it's not the first time that James Bond comics had been published. In fact, there is an interesting, very on and off again history of James Bond graphic novels. I feel like we've talked about the GoldenEye one before on one of the episodes.
Yes,
in the
we
past.
Did. We did. Even that was not the first James Bond comic book of adventure.
And we can go back to the newspaper strips.
Exactly.
Back in the day. I mean, I like those so much. I have softcover ones and hardcover ones.
You know, I need to get those. So if you're eventually willing to depart.
Nope.
Good answer. But I think the first adaptation of a James Bond comic movie was actually in... It's an issue of DC Comics Showcase. Let me see if I can zoom in. And
for eyes only?
No. It's Dr. No. And they did the comic book adaptation of Dr. No. And it's issue. I'm going to try and read. Can I read? Because it's a DC Showcase. And it's issue... number 13, April, and then they're doing. I don't know if you've ever seen that cover.
I might have.
It's they're adapting Doctor No. I don't know how faithful it is. That doesn't really look like Sean Connery, and that could resemble Joseph Wiseman. But yeah, they did that, and later on, I think it took a couple of years off. I think the next one is For Your Eyes Only, which was a 3-issue miniseries, if I remember correctly. And Jeff Wybo actually shown us the cover of the Octopussy movie.
Hardcover.
Yeah.
Did not know that existed.
I didn't either. And I think they skipped A View to a Kill. And there's a miniseries adaptation of License to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfinished GoldenEye, which I think the entire 3 issues is completed, but they never printed issue 2 or 3. I've seen the covers. They're gorgeous, but I never saw print, unfortunately. So here what we have is something quite unique.
Yeah.
It is
original.
Yeah, original. And the first actually original story conceived for comic books. And it's print. I thought at first it was Dark Horse Comics that got the license, but it's something called Eclipse / Acme, which is not a publisher I'm familiar with. I'm fully expecting or guessing that they closed down. They are not around anymore. And from the information I have, they're gone. Mm. But the license eventually found its way to Dark Horse. It went to Top Comics for GoldenEye, and it took Dynamite Entertainment to pick it up.
Mm.
So right now we're talking about 1989's Permission to Die, written and illustrated by Mike Grell, mostly known for his Green Arrow comic book series.
Same diff.
He did something called The Longbow Hunters. I think I've read that one. And he did another series about some, I don't remember the title, it's some guy in sort of a Lord of the Rings slash space opera. I don't remember the title from DC Comics. He got to work on the James Bond in the late 80s, and he wrote and drew the comic. We've actually had the chance to speak with Mike Grell at the Montreal Comic Con, and after their discussion of this book, he was quite a nice guy. And one of the things I'll spoil is that they tried to get this reprinted a couple years ago, and apparently Ian Fleming Publication don't like free money, and they didn't see the interest in reprinting it. And I'm like,
Ian Fleming Publications didn't see the interest in printing a James Bond story.
From what I understood, and I might be mistaken, I haven't re-listened to the interview myself, but that's what I remember. And I was like, well, they don't like free money. That book has been paid for years ago. All you need to do is probably maybe redo the coloring if you want, or refurbish it and send it to printers, and Bond fans would buy it. People who are into that artist would buy it. You'd get some buzz out of it. And there's a ton of other books they could actually reprint. They could actually finish GoldenEye, make an event of it where we're reprinting as much old James Bond comics as we can. We're doing like nice art covers, and like the first one out could be whatever you want. Could be Permission to Die. Could be another one. But they could actually finish GoldenEye, or actually print it correctly, the entire miniseries in a trade paperback form. They could have posters, because I mean, those covers, people, if you're interested, Google Permission to Die James Bond comic. Just look at the covers. They're wrap around. They're gorgeous. They're, honestly, I would love to have posters of those.
Yeah.
Would love to have that as a wallpaper on my cell phone, because they're kind of made to be on the wall.
Yeah, that one's really nice.
Yeah, that one, the issue, and that's issue two, would be gorgeous on your cell phone or your tablet. I don't understand. The artist, Mark Grill, was just as puzzled. And I'm like, you know what? We're going to try and push this episode as much as we can. I'm going to see if other people are interested in just pushing, because I would love to see those books reprinted or finished completely printing, like GoldenEye.
How much did those run you by?
That original set cost me $20.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad. But I mean, those are 30-year-old comics. Mm.
You think they'd be collector's items or something? They look to be in great condition.
They're in great condition. I mean, for books that, but they're gorgeous to look at. And
I like the semi-hardcover.
No, it's medium soft. I don't know what's the proper. I think it's called Merweb or something. I don't know what the term is, but it is not a hard cover, but it's not like soft cover, like a single issue. It is a little bit more refined.
I do like this.
No, I like that. I actually really like that character. There's some sexy moments in that comic book.
This is Roger Moore is put to shame in this story, I'll tell you that much.
I know you didn't completely read the comic, so let me just tell you the story of Permission to Die, written and illustrated by Mike Grell. It's the late 1980s. A hostage situation by a group of terrorists is stopped when one of the guests manages to free himself and eliminate the threat. That person, James Bond 007. The following day, M gives 007 a new assignment: locate and liberate Dr. Eric Wizaldo's niece, Edane Gala, from Czechoslovakia-controlled Soviet Union. In exchange, Wizaldo offers to give the British access to his rocket delivery system that he can put a satellite in orbit at the fraction of the current cost. Q equips 007 with the ASP, a custom-designed handgun, powerful and lighter than Bond's usual PPK. Now, the action moves to Budapest. In order to complete his mission, Bond recruits the help of Vavra, a gypsy and friend of the late Karimbe, one of Bond's allies during From Russia with Love. There, Bond encounters Lulu Dai, Karim's daughter. After a brief violent encounter with the gypsy's leader's son, Lulu Dai and Bond make love. The following morning, the camp is attacked by Russians, led there by the treacherous gypsy chief's son. Upon learning of his son's betrayal, the chief promptly executes him. Then, suddenly, Vavra is shot dead by what appears to be a silver bullet, a type of ammunition that Vavra had told Bond only one man, the Wolf, a sniper assassin, uses. After seeking some reinforcement from Q Branch, bond with Lulu Dai and the gypsy managed to rescue Elaine Gala. Now, aboard Little Nelly Mark II, because it's a two-seater now, Bond and Elaine managed to avoid Soviet helicopters in pursuit. Forced to land after the aerial duel, the duo keeps running for the border while being chased by the assassin, the Wolf. With the help of some horses, managed to steal. Things are looking up for 007. A final attempt by the Wolves is thwarted by 007's well-placed mine. Kaboom. Free at last, Bond finally brings Elaine Gala to her uncle. Immediately, though, Bond suspects something is wrong. Whether it's the good doctor's creepy mask that hides his disfigurement, or his mountain retreat, or his cold but attractive assistant, Sula, Bond can't help but explore the doctor's hideaway. He finally encounters an armed woman, Mary Chase, a former owner of a local hunting lodge. She explains to Bond that she lost her license a year earlier after one of her clients who was investigating Wizaldo's was found dead, his corpse mutilated. Bond, after some investigating and fornicating, brings Mary Chase in contact with Felix Leiter. They discover that Wizaldo has been smuggling obscene amounts of rocket fuel. With a small sub, Bond manages to sneak in Wizaldo's lair. Sula spots Bond and captures him. And then Wizaldo reveals that Elaine isn't his niece. She's a former lover of his. And he also confides involvement in the Chernobyl disaster and his plan to use his rocket launching device to nuke Victoria, British Columbia in a desperate, insane plot warning the world of the dangers of nuclear energy. Trapped in the path of Wizaldo's rocket, Bond is saved and freed at the last minute by Mary Chase, who guns down Sula. Bond is unable to stop the launch, but could close the rocket's exit port, ensuring that the weapon will not leave Wizaldo's base, but level it from the inside. But Elaine Gala is armed and guarding the controls. Disgusted by the monster Wizaldo has become, she closes the port herself and lets Marion James escape while she prefers to die with Eric. The weapon goes off, Wizaldo and Gala are killed. Bond, after the destruction, reflects, sacrificing a few to save many. Who knows? It might have worked, and I'd be out of a job. The end.
Well, well, well.
I really liked this comic book. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It's and some of the artwork, there's some pages I really love that are lovely sort of reinterpretation of classic movie Bond moment. And I feel that's the strength of this book, is that they take a little bit of Fleming, take a little bit of movies, shake well, put on nice with a dash of 80s aesthetics at times.
Yeah, the hairdo sometimes.
Especially for the woman.
Sula.
And I asked...
Sula's a white Mayday.
Sula, you know, I would love to hear from Mike Grell, but I know who he didn't copy, and it's going to be an interview, but I'm spoiling it, but he said he didn't really copy any actor's likeness, but he got inspired by him. Like, you look at pictures, like, hey, it's the sort of person I saw. It was the villain, Dr. Wizaldo. I asked him, because I feel like he really looks like Peter Cushing. My impression at the first time I read it, I was like, that really looks like Peter Cushing. So I asked him, who is it? I said, no, actually, it's Terrence Stamp. And I'm like, oh, but they have similar facial structures. So I'm like, you know what? It makes perfect sense. And for the character of Sula, I'm about 90% certain it's inspired by Bridget Nielsen circa 1980s. It's like, that's what she looked like. She's like strong female, sort of very statuesque looking, short sort of cropped hair. So I'm like, it's Bridget Nielsen. Some of them.
Even Mary Chase at the party near the end where she pretends to spill a drink over Bond's, her hairdo is very 80s. It is. It's quite something.
Most 80s thing ever. It's fantastic. But when I spoke to him, he's obviously a big Bond fan himself.
Nice.
And it's a shame that it's not as well known as, it's pretty much what Dynamite Comics is doing right now. So they take elements from the book, the movies, they kind of modernize them and It's what they're doing. If anyone from Dynamite Entertainment is ever listens to us, please seriously consider republishing some of the help create another label or whatever you have to do. But it's free money. Those books are paid for. You just need to print them. People will buy them. I'll buy them. I've been waiting for those last two issues of GoldenEye for the past 20 freaking years.
So, yeah, it's an interesting book. There's a part of me that feels it's a bit of a mishmash of a lot of things that
it's that by we've design. Seen before. It's, yeah. It is by design. The author confirmed it.
By design does not equate great. You know, by design, okay, you could have done something else too.
Yeah,
but it didn't harm the book. It's just a little. It's just a slight vibe I got. Like, okay, so we're doing this because it's a Bond adventure, and Bond adventures have to do this, and na-na-na-na-na-na. But on the whole, I'd say I enjoyed it too. I actually really like the artwork a lot, both on the cover and within. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful book. I think it's on par with some of the things that Dynamite have actually been publishing. And furthermore, the same gentleman, you know, did all the work. He wrote it, and so he came up with the story. He reimagined characters we know. He created new characters. He drew everything. It's really a very, very impressive feat, and it's big. Each book is like 40 pages, give or take. So, you know, we're talking about a 120-page.
No ads. That thing was printed. There's no ads at all. There's no commercials in this one, which is surprising, especially at the time. And it's a smaller publisher, but they printed them, and there's no ads in at all.
It's pure 007. It's 100% 007.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a cheap. It's a cheap investment to get those books today on the secondary market. But I, you know, if they did a reprinting, a nice reprinting in a thick book with high quality paper, and maybe, you know, additional material, interviews with Mike Grell, maybe some
the transcript of the Comic-Con interview.
No, you don't need that. But you know, some additional like notes. You know, character sketches, whatever he may still have in his archives, black and white covers or whatever additional material you want. That'd be interesting. I'd be super hyped. I would buy those books. And if he could, you know, there's another one that there's the Quasimodo Gambit, I think. There's a couple other books that I haven't read. Ever managed to read?
I have a bit of online shopping to do. I don't even have those. I shall not reveal how I read the book, but I don't have those, so I should probably buy a copy myself, and as well as the ones that I obviously don't own. Isn't there one where he fights aliens? Or is that just a rumor?
The what?
He fights aliens.
It
might be just a rumor.
A myth. You know, it might be true. I'm unaware of that. I mean, Dark Horse at the comics. They did a couple of ones in the early 90s. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did, to be honest.
Who knows?
You can do it. No, there's also a gentleman somewhere in Canada, because apparently the license in Canada for James Bond has expired. So
license for Ian Fleming.
Yeah. It's public domain. So somebody wrote some horror stories where James Bond fights Cthulhu,
those squid things.
Yeah, those squid things. And I'm not saying we will do that as an Halloween special, but I'd really love to be discussed.
To get our hands on them first.
We'll reach out to the publisher. Maybe they have a spare copy somewhere, but apparently they're sold out like years ago. So that'd be something I'd love to read. And
vouch for a graphic novel adaptation.
You know, they could somebody, but no. Back to license renewed.
Permission to die.
Jeez, back to permission to die.
These titles, we got to come up with better titles.
The reason why
it's called permission to die is pretty. I don't know if the title came first and then Mike Grell was like, oh man, I got to fit it into the book, or he wrote the book and said, shoot, what's the title? I'll take that line from the book. I don't know, like, what was what came first, the chicken or the egg? But whether it was the chicken or the egg, it's a little.
It's not the most original title. It feels more like a chapter of a Fleming book than the title of a Fleming book. Like, I could see a channel, Permission to Die, and it's like chapter 14.
Mm.
It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But as the title, it's a little bit underwhelming, a little bit dry.
Yeah, it's a little dry. What's not dry is the introduction, is the pre-title, whatever, our opening scene.
Or the pre-title sequence.
Yeah, the pre-title sequence, we'll call it that. It's pretty funny. I do like it, where they have these nondescript terrorists that have invaded. We're in England. We're probably in London by the sounds of it, by the looks of it. And these unknown, undescribed terrorists have taken over a party at the American ambassador's place. And Bond happened, obviously, who's among the guests but Bond? Wearing a kilt. Wearing a kilt. Got to rock that baby. And yeah, he's their man inside. And it's really cool. I do like the introduction. When I read that, I said, you know what? I think Mike Grell, he knows how to please. He knows how to please me.
He has the touch. It's a, you know, Dynamite, they could hire him. They should hire him.
Yeah, why not? Like guy's still, we just saw him weeks ago. He's still there.
Still there, still drawing. You know.
And that's bang number one, because you know he's doing that woman at the end of the pre-title sequence.
And I asked him whose his inspiration was for Bond, and he confirmed.
Can I answer?
Yeah, oh, yeah, you know.
Colgi Carmichael?
You won one tuxedo.
Oh, cool. Does it fit me?
No, it's a picture of a tuxedo.
it's a tux t-shirt.
Tux t-shirt,
yeah. It's pretty obvious. No, not that I'm complaining, but and that's a nice little tip of the hat to the original material.
It's what you kind of expect and want, actually, from a...
And he looks good. Yeah, if Colby Carmichael, you know, was James Bond, there you go. Looks like that. That's no problem.
I don't think he's the first nor the last that will try and take elements of Colby Carmichael's likeness. And he explained to me, like, well, there's a close-up of his face, and he gave him
the... Oh, when he's like, he lit the cigarette there at the end of the pre-titles? That's a great shot.
But he gave him the scar, but it's more like a scar that went on his eyebrow and like on his cheek than just on the cheek. Mm. It's just like somebody trying to stab him in the face and almost got into his eyeballs.
Almost. You know what happened to that other guy, though? He got no eyeballs left.
He's somewhere rutting away. Mm. So we got that sequence. When we are introduced to M, and M, I can't put my finger on who he's based off, and he's not a major...
Sometimes it's just, you know...
He's not a major character. The one that really made me laugh is Major Boutroy Q, because he's obviously based on the real Major Boutroy with the big mustache.
Yeah.
That's quite funny.
And I do, I like the little moment where Q says, well, here's your new gun. You know, the old gun was good for a while, but the enemies have adapted, so we have to adapt as well. That's very smart. So here's your new pistol. You can... You know, it's okay if you keep the other one as you already do in the trunk of your whatever. Oh, you think I didn't know that, huh?
Yeah.
I know everything. That was cool. But we should maybe go back to the M scene, because this is our classic M scene where we set things up.
There's so much data dumping in that sequence.
Uninteresting.
But I'm just saying there is a lot of data dumping.
It's an M scene, though. I mean, what do you want? It's like this is what the M scene is for.
Okay, I got the mission.
Yeah, Grell tries to keep things interesting with the art. Sometimes, you know, the shots, I call them shots. Sometimes the frames, the angles are different, and the shadows. So he does keep the artwork reasonably interesting during this conversation. Yeah. But it's about 3 or 4 pages of, like, you know, what do you know about Star Wars? And James Bond said...
Well, there's Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher.
Be serious, 007.
No, it is interesting, because the rocket launching system that they discuss is actually based on actual things that they were trying to build, I think, in the 1880s to launch rockets. But it's more like almost like a slide, and with magnets. It's not really a rocket per se, but it is, like, you kind of see it in the book later on. And the last issue, the last volume, is probably the craziest one, because the first two kind of feel like more in the real world. By the third book, you're in You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
It's pretty evident that's the inspiration. The first one is a little bit more, I would say from the first two, more from Russia.
Definitely from Russia with Love.
A little bit of the Living Daylights.
The fact that Vavra is there helps a lot. We're sort of in that region of the world, Hungary, you know, Istanbul. We're not in Istanbul, it's from Russia with Love, but we're in Hungary. They're in Hungary, right, in the first issue? So like more or less, we're in that region of the globe. We see the gypsies again. We do see a bay. We do meet a bay.
Ludai
B-E-Y, not B-A-E, although she kind of is a B-A-E for a little while there. And so, yeah, the first issue, number one, is very much a From Russia with Love issue. Issue number two is more of a...
Elements of the... Well, I mean, I was going to say the Living Daylights, but the Living Daylights takes a lot also from Russia with Love. But there's a character chasing Bond. He's made up to be a much more threatening character than he ends up being. But
yeah, what is it with it? What did we talk about recently that was a wet noodle in that?
Oh, regard? Franco.
Franco in License Renewed. Yeah, we're on a bit of a bad streak here of, oh, this character is going to be awesome. And like they're dead so long before the book or the graphic novel ends. And
I think this is also, I wouldn't say victim, but this is how books were conceived until fairly recently, where they're designed for, if you pick up an issue and it's your first, you're still going to understand the story. It's sort of a complete story in its own. So if you pick up issue two, by the end, okay, he makes, like, it is...
Yeah, it does end. The story could end there.
Exactly. So it's by design that they...
Not issue one, though. Issue one is a bit of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, issue one maybe. But, you know, it's also issue one. But more or less back then, that's how books were written. So but you kind of feel that character should either have been introduced a little bit earlier in the storyline or lasted until issue three. The fact that he's introduced in issue two and dies in issue two makes him less threatening than he should be. He should be a more constant thorn in Bond's side than he ends up being.
Because then they introduce Sula in issue three, and she doesn't end up doing that much, really.
She ends up banging Bond.
And let's be clear. She bangs him. I don't think it happened the other way around. She is the White Mayday.
he sleeps around a lot in that book.
Let's do a head count. You got the girl who lights a cigarette.
Yeah.
Lights his cigarette. We have...
Karenby's daughter.
Botany.
Botany?
That's her nickname.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Then we have Idain.
Does he sleep with her?
Are you kidding me, bro?
I'm
I think they sleep twice.
All right, wait. At 10 seconds. No, I don't think they don't. I don't think he bangs her. He bangs Karen Bay's daughters twice.
All right, that's what I'm referring to.
Oh, I'm talking about Eden. So let's start over. He bangs the girl in the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. He bangs Karen Bay's daughter.
He gives money a penny massage.
He doesn't touch Eden Gala. Gala. He doesn't touch Aiden.
Well, they mac out a little bit in the truck, I think.
Yeah, but it doesn't count.
Well, we don't know what happened after that.
Oh.
Got the motor running.
If you want, we'll count her. I would have to go back through the book again, but I don't remember. Let me see. Because he doesn't sleep with her before going to...
I do find it interesting, considering what we discover later about her, that she's like, okay, let's kiss now.
Yeah. Because she's a bad guy. No, I don't think no, I see that there's a panel it's okay. Okay, we'll count her. So let's do a head count. We got the opening girl, we got Karen Bay's daughter, we got Aiden Gala, which is implied, we got Sula. He doesn't sleep with Mary Chase.
No, and that one's not even suggested. I guess Mike Grell at that point was like, Jesus Christ.
I have a full hand.
He has Bond sleep with more women than there are books.
But, you know, especially at that time, it was it's pretty standard for a Roger Moore adventure, I guess.
It was the 80s. Weren't they all terrified? Or isn't that the reason why Living Daylights was he was a one woman, which is not true because he sleeps with the one in the pre-title sequence. But I don't know why they say that's a one woman Bond film, but it's my grail was like, nope, I'm doing it this way.
You know what? It is sexy and it's meant to be a little bit titillating, and some panels are a little bit, you know, they're a little bit racy for
Botany looks amazing.
Yeah. And even Sulla, there's panels I'm like, yeah, that's very. They're very.
The haircut's not doing it for me though.
Huh?
The haircut's not doing it for me.
It depends. Sometimes it works on certain women. Sometimes certain women. Carrie Lowell, for example, works for.
She doesn't have that haircut.
No, but I mean the short haircut, but works for Bridget Nielsen somehow.
She looks like a taller David Bowie with breasts.
Thank you. Moving along now. Q gets the new gun, which I mean. Okay, whatevs.
Kind of, really. Honestly,
well,
I
think if I remember from the interview, it's something that's they were contractually obliged to do. Like you couldn't use the PPK. It's on the interview, I'm pretty sure. So.
And do the exploding bullets ever come into play? I don't remember. Not really.
No,
it's a cool idea.
It's a cool idea.
It's a grotesque idea. They explode only when they're in you.
But it's been recycled. If I remember, Eidolon has bullets that more or less perform this similarly. And it's way gross also in that book where the bullet like sort of explodes and continues. It's just
the X-ray shots.
Yeah, it's just kind of gross. bone chilling.
Bone breaking.
So we finally make it to Budapest where we meet Vavra. And it's not clear, Vavra, the way, like he's a character from the movie. He's not in the book. But it doesn't look like he recognizes Bond. So
I felt he did.
And in the movie, he doesn't speak any English.
So I know, that's the funny thing. I don't understand what, again, creative liberty, creative
and it's
license.
Such an obscure character in the film. So I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Keep reading along. It brings him to the that's later on. He talks about the wolf and he's like, oh, that assassin, because somebody tries to kill Vavra, but Bond stops him. He's like, oh, that's nothing. The wolf, that's the one you have to worry about. The wolf, we will hit you with.
This man kills for pleasure.
This man kills you with the silver bullets, and he used to be a wolf or whatever that means. But I think it's more like a shepherd.
He used to hunt a different type of game until he found something that was more lucrative. Isn't that more or less the dialogue?
So he's a sniper, basically.
Yeah.
We make it to I was going to say Karim, but it's Vavra's camp, and we meet one of Karim's, the only daughter he ever had, apparently. He had a bunch of sons, probably with different women, and he had this one daughter.
And she's sort of respected it, but also feared in a sense. People believe
she's
so
cool. She is so cool.
She may have inherited, it's not really described, but gypsy special powers. She's a gypsy X-Men.
She has a exotic quality that I really, really enjoy about her.
No, she is a lot of fun, and she's drawn like very, very well. Mm.
She's badass. She's
my favorite Bond girl of the book, and I think she's the one. I feel she's the one Mike Grell put the most effort into making like.
Oh, she's
extraordinarily hot.
She's by design, by conception. I wish she was around for the entire three books, but by issue three, she's gone. But
by the end of issue two, she's out of there. She like sort of protects. She gives him cover fire.
He doesn't kill her. It doesn't kill her, but
which is nice.
Which is nice. I mean, if they did a sequel to it, which I don't think is ever going to happen, to be honest. Which I'm the first one I'm saying I would actually. Buy a sequel, and if they brought that character back, it's a cool character to be.
Although it does force the great James Bond timeline question: if James Bond has already lived for Much Love, and mind you, Karim is older than James Bond.
This
he is
book
older than James
takes Bond. Place in 1986, so I mean, I don't know when what's it called? The train, the Orient Express stop. I think it's in the 70s. I'm not mistaken. So, the timeline is a little bit. Don't think too much about it.
Yeah, I know. But when it's like the daughter of the character, it's like what?
So it takes place after 1986 because of the Chernobyl reference. But yeah, that's its timeline. If you think about it, I don't think it really makes up.
We're getting into like fuzzy territory.
Yeah, you don't.
James Bond timeline is already fuzzy. This is like, what?
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. It's just a cool storyline. There's some cool babes. There's some cool action sequence.
Character's still fun though. So.
Yeah, the character's still fun. I mean,
it's all good. One character who's not so fun is the chieftain's son.
Yeah. He has a name. He's one of the named characters. I'm like, I almost put him in the synopsis, but he's so insignificant.
Like, well, his actions result in the camp being ambushed by the Russians.
But though, except for being a jerk, doesn't have, so I didn't put his name. Like, you're not worthy of being mentioned in the synopsis, so I skipped that. But yeah,
he's a little prick.
He's a little prick, basically. A little snobby. Well, that's probably bitchy.
He's a traitor.
He's a traitor.
Which, and the bitter irony is that he challenges Bond mano a mano. I don't know how to say that in gypsy speak. And Bond kicks the crap out of him, but refuses to kill him. And his father, the chieftain, says, "Thanks for not killing my son, bruh." And lo and behold, the next day, it's like, "You should have killed my son, bruh."
Yes, he was a freaking prick. And yeah, Vavra is killed. Boom. Bullet.
By
the wolf.
The wolf. So we do see the wolf in action. And for the record, I actually liked the look of the wolf.
Yeah, the bald dude with long hair.
Yeah, with long hair.
It's always a look that's a little bit creepy. It kind of reminds me of the villain in the second RoboCop movie. Oh, Kane.
Noonan. Something Noonan.
Yeah, Thomas Noonan.
Yeah.
We took it the bald and kind of creepy. That's who I'm seeing. I don't know if my girl, like, I don't know every aspiration. I didn't have the time to ask it. If I were casting the movie, that's like 1980-something Thomas Newman.
Yeah.
Is it Thomas Newman?
Tom Noonan, I think.
Tom Newman. Well,
Thomas Newman is
a, yeah, that's why I'm confused.
Music composer for Spectre and Skyfall.
Spectre. So, yeah, he's brought on to kill Bond.
That's the thing. He was brought on to kill Favre.
But now he's...
And then the Russian guy... There's this other character we only see for one scene that was going to torture what's her name?
Gala.
So he was going to like interrogate her, and he's like, "What? You didn't kill Bond?" And the wolf is like, "My contract was only to kill the other person." So that's the thing. He does not kill Bond because he does what he's paid to do.
He wants his money. Exactly. Which I agree with them. But
killing Bond will cost you double too. No, doble. What's the matter with you? What's the matter with you?
And unfortunately for him, he never gets to spend that money. They plan to capture her because she's being transported. She's sort of, I don't know, is she in jail the entire time? Because it's been...
I think she's under surveillance.
Yeah.
Because she's a nuclear physicist in her own right. So she's obviously doing some sort of work for the state, for the Soviet mm-hmm. Union. They obviously are aware of...
Oh, we didn't mention that Wizaldo was... an immigrant that snuck out of the Iron Curtain and made millions in America, and he built his famous cheap rocket propulsion system that he's not willing to share with anyone. And she was left behind. She's supposed to be his niece, but surprise! It's something. I'm like, why did they add that twist that they're actually lovers? Because in the end, it really doesn't matter.
Has no bearing on the plot whatsoever.
It's creepy, but I've seen people.
Frankly, if I had written that, it's still his niece.
I think it's yeah. You know what? It's still his niece, and if you want to be extra creepy, he still wants to fornicate with her. That's
where I'm going with that.
Yeah, that's much creepier than no. It's creepier, and it might have been the author's initial intention, and he might have been forced to change that at the last minute. It may not. I don't know, but her idea is actually makes the bad guy in the end a little bit more creepy, which I like. For a villain, it's good to be creepy. So they finally, like, through some means and some commando units of Gypsy, managed to recapture from the Russians. And Bond, the night before, ordered somebody from Q Branch to bring special equipment. It turns out to be, like, as I called it, Little Nelly Mark II, because it's a two-seater.
Mm.
And it's different than the one in front. You Only Live Twice. I think probably legally they had to change it.
I have no idea. Legally, it looks a little bit different. Aren't they actually sitting inside a compartment?
No, they're. It's like a.
I don't remember.
It's like two chairs. Like it's almost like an helicopter, but without any external component protective. So he's a basically gyro? Yeah. It's a gyro. It's a mini gyro.
And that, but I do like the fact that as they escape, they require cover fire because there's a Soviet Army helicopter in pursuit. And who should provide said cover fire? But of course, Botany, who has the chain gun, and she's just loving it.
I love it. You did the sound effects.
I know it's fine. And she's and again, it's a great sequence. It's a great action sequence. Unfortunately, you know, it's also exit, but not because she doesn't die. But we don't see her after that. But it's a fun sequence. I do like. When they go into the tunnel, and light at the end of the tunnel means a train, and boom, crash, ping, pong, pong.
They finally land. They're out of gas. I think that one of the bullets hit the gas tank, so they have to go on a little hiking adventure. And Bond eventually finds some horses or steals some horses. That's not really clear.
Well, they find a refuge in an abandoned. I do like the fact that he steals baby eggs and
breakfast of champions,
pure
and
they're filtered.
And they eventually they make it to the border, and Bond somehow has mines placed everywhere.
Yeah, I did. Okay, do you understand how the wolf dies? I mean, yes, he blows up, but like, what?
Honestly, it's one of the elements. I'm like, oh, that's a little bit. That's why it's underwhelming, because you feel like they should you should have a more cooler exit than that. It's like, oh, he was like, I don't know how he made it so that he would stand exactly at the spot that he placed his mind.
I just figured it out. It's the wolf. So we're back to our Fleming, you know, animal analogies. He's the wolf. He follows the scent. So wherever Bond walked. I don't know if you pay attention to the frames, yeah. He's actually on his fours.
And yeah.
That's what he does, and when he just stops.
He's literally a wolf.
I do like the scene. I do like the scene when he almost catches up with them, where they had some eggs, and he's on his fours, and he sees a little puddle of stuff, and you know, a little brownish, and goes like. Fresh. They've been here recently. My favorite scene.
Is that really in the book?
No. He's not on all fours and licks their shit. He doesn't do that. But the punchline is fun. Some people can't stand to lose. They just fall to pieces. I do like that. But I could have come later in the book. Are you still looking for the scene where he licks their shit?
No, I'm looking. Look, I'm trying to find why... It is, it's the most underwhelming aspect of the book. That.
You know what would have been really cool? If they had encountered a pack of wolves. And he gets, hoisted by your own petard.
Honestly, I would have preferred that it's just a mine. Or, you know what? Maybe Bond put some blood or something, like something so that the wolves would pick up his scent and attack him. Something that... A little bit more personalized, more exciting exit for that character. It's just he
it's
blows
too
him up
soon as well.
Yeah, he blows him up after blowing up some because he put mines on the fence, and when the Russian soldiers,
oh god,
like he blows up the fence. And
do you remember the panel?
It's brutal because like the it's a chain, not a chain link. What's it called in English?
Oh, barbed wire.
It's a barbed wire fence, and so when it explodes, it like the barbed wire. Slices to all the soldiers, so it's kind of gross. It's actually a better exit than, and not as like because he does it again. It's redundant. You need something extra special. The blood
I got
from the dead Russians attracts wolves.
I got what? No, but it's not. That's not bad though. I got it. The wolf approaches the barbed wire. Explosion. Loses his eyes, but he can still pick up Bond and Gala because he's the wolf. He picks up the scent.
Okay, I like my idea better.
Really? I like mine, actually.
But you know what? That is a minor torn. And so far, a good chase sequence. It's the only problem I see with that sequence. It needs a little bit more refinement for that character's exit. Mm. Finally, they're out and takes us to issue 3, where we go to, I think it's actually a real place. I didn't
Google. Out to the USA.
Right, back to the US. And I love that, like, the first page was, it's sort of like previously in the James Bond permission.
But have you noticed the publication? That's 2 years later.
Really? That's from 1990? 1991. Wow, they took their time.
Why do you think there's a previously on?
Yeah, you kind of need when it takes 2 years to finish your series. Wow, we're lucky to have it been completed.
Could have been another GoldenEye.
Yeah, almost.
Or a precursor to GoldenEye.
So they go to, it's Lake Pandore or Pandore. I don't know if it's a real thing. Let me check on
Pandore.
Pandore. Let me verify.
Earbred.
It's in Idaho. Didn't get. So it's one of the biggest fresh lake.
Yeah,
in the USA.
So
that's where the villain built his base. And you don't know he's a villain yet, but man, it is the most, like, I'm thinking this is James Bond. This is a character that's been in many, many missions. He fought Blofeld in the volcano. Like, he's been around. So, I mean, you're a billionaire, industrialist, whatever. You invite him to your mountain lair, and there you have a creepy mask. It's like is my Bond sense is tingling.
007. Yeah, but Matthew, what you fail to pick up on is we don't know what Bond does on his weekends between missions. He might spend his weekends at lush hideouts. From people that are perfectly respectable business people.
Just end up having big scars that they have to put mask to hide from the public.
Exactly. But it's not a mission. They're perfectly fine. They just suffered a horrible accident and now they're helping the world to become a better place. We get the books and the comics and the movies of the crackpots.
Of the crackpots. Yeah. Okay, I see. And he's not the most incredible villain, honestly.
He looks interesting because there's the whole Phantom of the Opera thing going on. There's the organ that he plays.
That's
true.
That's kind of cool. I was going to say, I love when he explains his entire, like, crackpot deal because the way it's drawn, the way it's sort of staged, it looks like craziest mother effer out there. Like, he's just
generally... he is. There's some serious License Renewed. Again, it helps that we read License Renewed so recently, but there's a lot of vibes in that. Like, oh yeah, I tried to prove that their nuclear reactors weren't safe. Huh, where have I heard that one before? I'm going to test this thing to make people understand that they need better. Huh, where have I heard that thing before?
He plans to attack Canada.
Victoria,
British Columbia. Yeah. That's bizarre,
but he's not that bad because Victoria apparently the wind or its location would have the fallout become that bad.
And it's never really explained how he got his nuke or how he made his money. No, it's a detail. And honestly, when you're there at the book, it's you just want shit to blow up. Mm.
And there's a bit of I do very much like the book, but if we're going to get into some of the details, there's a bit of a bizarre switch in the third and final issue when this Mademoiselle Chase shows up all of a sudden. It's like, okay, so Bond girl number 17 of the book?
Need a Bond girl per book, basically. That's how I read it.
Kind of, yeah, because it can't be Gala anymore because she's... She's
not yet revealed to be in link with the villains, but it's you can
not real to be in link, but she's definitely in bed.
Because it turns out
kissing cousins.
Yeah, more than kissing cousins, it's like my pupil.
Pupil. Yes, miss. Yes, papa. Oh, come to daddy.
Come to daddy, papa. Mm, oh, that's creepy.
Let me teach you.
The lesson in love. Oh, I'm gonna,
brilliant student.
I'm going to take out my creepy pervert voice.
We speak the same tongue.
Jesus. Yeah, so yeah, there's a creepy vibe there, but it, for a villain, it works.
Oh, if it's the villain, I have no problem. The creepier, the better. Yeah. They're the bad guy.
They should. Yeah, make them weird. The mask is a little bit much, but you know, you made a point. It's Phantom of the Opera, which is something